if you think you know the Four Noble Truths, congratulations. I've been studying it for many decades, and still my understanding constantly evolves. With all of the teachings, you should never think that you've finally got your stamp. You should keep it evolving, because we're evolving, we're changing, and hopefully these teachings will grow. And as you actually try to put them into practice, you'll understand them in a much deeper way than just an intellectual way. Just understanding the Buddhist teachings intellectually is the, like the old analogy of somebody telling you how to ride a bike. It's only useful to the extent that it gives you some pointers, but really you've got to get on the bike and balance and push yourself. And once you do that, you can actually get somewhere. And you don't really get anywhere by just understanding the teachings. You get somewhere by actually putting them into practice. So that's really what we focus on, is giving people the tools to end their stress and suffering, the tools that were developed by the Buddha 2,500 years ago. So the guy got a big jump on the world of psychology. So, the Buddha, in essence, taught that the mind is a cause and effect process or a machine or organ, and that it's pretty closed off. I'm going to tell you what that means. Causal, basically, the Buddha said, is that everything we experience has a cause. It's not just happening by accident. It's not simply our happiness happens entirely by accident, or our stress happens by accident, or that we feel good simply by accident. These are effects, and they have causes. So immediately, that's the founding principle of karma, the founding principle of all that the Buddha taught, that everything we experience is an effect, and everything that we experience has a cause to it. Now, if you want to work with cause and effect, it's important to realize that you've got to focus on the causes if you want to get rid of an effect. For example, if you've got insomnia and you're drinking all day long coffee, if you simply try to take a sleeping pill, that's stupid. If you get angry at yourself because you're not falling asleep, that's dumb, right? Because there's an obvious cause. You're drinking caffeine all day long. If you want to get rid of the effect, insomnia, you've got to focus on the cause, which is caffeine, for example, or it could be any other. Insomnia has many causes, but that's just an example of a cause and effect. Another obvious example is crime, for example, in the world. If you want to get rid of crime, a lot of people think the best way is just to lock up people forever. That's not the way you do it. You create job opportunities, give people education and opportunities. Then people don't cause crime. That's called attacking the cause, not the effect. If you just try to lock up people without giving them any alternative, giving them jobs, giving them social programs, etc., they're just going to go back out and commit more crimes. Same thing with your insomnia. You take a sleeping pill, and then the next day you drink 12 cups of coffee, the next night you're going to have insomnia. So we've got to focus in life on attacking the cause if we don't like what we're experiencing, which is the effect. Now, closed off, which is the second part, is that the Buddha said, yes, we're aware of what's going on in the world around us, and the world around us can trigger some events in the mind, but by and large, the causes of our suffering and our happiness are internal. They're the things we think about, the things that we plan. There are also our actions and our speech. But we are the author of our suffering. It's not happening outside making us miserable. Most people think that throughout the course of their day, if they're stressed out, if they're angry, if they're frustrated, if they're upset, they blame people around them or their jobs or whatever. But that's not what the Buddha is teaching. The Buddha is showing that, yes, we make contact with things around us in the world. Things around us in the world will have frustrating elements to it, but that's natural. That's what happens to everybody. It's the way we react to these things that we make contact to that causes our suffering and causes our happiness. So it's largely our intentions, the way we think, the way we focus the mind, that causes the happiness, the stress, the tranquility, whatever mental states we have. So rather than looking to change the world when you feel upset, the focus is, well, let's see how I'm reacting to the world. Okay. So the Buddha tended to, in this cause and effect land, he likes to put the effect first and then tell you what was the cause. In all of his teachings, the Buddha would say, well, some people experience anger. I'm going to tell you what causes it so that you can get rid of anger. Some people experience at various times frustration. I'm going to tell you what causes frustration and how then to get rid of it. He says what the effect is, and then he tells you what the cause is and how we can go about getting rid of it. So, that's what the Four Noble Truths are. They're simply a listing of two effects and two causes. That's it. It's two simple cause and effects that the Buddha listed. The first effect they listed is that in life, there's a lot of stress and a lot of suffering. That's the first noble truth, that in life, there's stress and suffering. That's it. If you argue with that point, I think you're nuts. Because if you don't think there's stress and suffering in your life, I have no idea what you're doing here to begin with. I have no idea why you've even bothered to sit and practice, because if your life is free of stress and suffering, you're doing something good. You don't need to come here. I've got very little to offer. But I'm assuming that you're like the vast majority of the human race that's conscious and that you're experiencing stress at times. The Buddha said that in life there's old age, sickness, and death. There's not getting what we want. There's getting things we don't want. There's losing the people we love and winding up with people we don't love. There's despair at having things go the wrong way. And furthermore, the Buddha says that all of these things happen to everyone. They happen to everyone. Everyone has days where they're frustrated. Everyone has days where they don't get the things they want. Everybody has shitty things going on. Everybody gets old. Everybody gets sick. Everybody goes through the process of dying. Everybody experiences loss. It's universal. But of course, one of the main problems is that we take it all personally. We take our aging personally. We take our sickness personally. What did I do wrong? Why am I sick? You didn't do anything wrong. That's just what the body does. It gets sick. What did I do wrong? I have wrinkles. You didn't do anything wrong. That's what happens when you get old. Believe me. What did I do wrong? I'm not getting the things I want. I'm frustrated with my job. Congratulations. You're a human being. That's what happens when you're a human being and you have a job. You get pissed off. So, all of these things are 100% universal, but we try to fight the universal experiences of life. We try to change them. Now, what happens, the specific process the Buddha teaches, is that when we're very young, as children, when we're hungry, we feel a sensation of hunger, and we're taught to, or we're fed. Somebody brings us food. We cry, We get food. So the inner feeling of hunger is answered by somebody bringing us food. When we're cold, we cry out and we make noises until somebody brings us a blanket. So the inner feeling of being cold is answered by somebody externally bringing us a blanket. You see what's going on here? An internal feeling is being answered by something external. So from this process, we look for all of these solutions to our internal problems, our stress, our suffering, our feeling uncomfortable. We look for the answer out there. We look for something in the world to distract us from the fact that we're feeling uncomfortable inside. For example, when people are lonely, they often, instead of investigating this feeling of loneliness, they immediately go out to a bar or, you know, call up people or go on Facebook or whatever. We immediately try to fill or distract that feeling so that we never have to feel it, so that we can get rid of it. We're trying to go out, flow out of the mind into the world so that we don't have to feel what's going on inside of us. Now, sometimes that works. The Buddha says we actually have to have food to survive, so it's perfectly reasonable to look for food. We need medicine when we're sick. We need shelter when we're cold or when we're hot, you know, and we need to have wise spiritual practitioners around us occasionally to find good guidance. So we have to balance. We do have to go out in the world and find skillful things, but we tend to, as human beings, go all the time outside of us to find the answer for everything. Whenever we feel the slightest pinch of discomfort, we translate that physical discomfort into I'm feeling lust. I have to sleep with someone. I'm feeling angry. I have to beat up someone. I'm feeling this. I have to get that. So there's this constant state of feeling something, translating it, and then looking for something to distract us or make it go away out there. That is another way of explaining the process of craving. The Buddha said that if the effect in life is that there is stress and suffering, the cause of it is craving. Is that we're constantly looking for the solution to the, where we're trying to get rid of the effect in the wrong place. We're not looking at where the real cause of it is. The real cause of so much is that we're feeling uncomfortable physically, where there's a physical feeling of just uncomfort that's caused maybe by some old memory or something that we don't know. And if we directed our energies inside and relaxed the body, relaxed the breath, we could alleviate so much of the stress and suffering that we feel. But instead, what we do is we create this state of craving where we look in the wrong place for a short-term distraction that makes us forget this underlying internal state. And we jump from one distraction to the other distraction to the other distraction. We look for sex, we look for money, we look for entertainment, we look for all these different things so that we don't have to experience what we're experiencing. Now, the Buddha said there's three real basic kinds of craving. The first kind is craving sensual or sensations that we like so that we can get rid of the feelings that we don't like. We can replace this feeling of loneliness with the sensation of being surrounded by people who love us. So we become very dependent upon these sensations. For instance, you might feel the sensation of emptiness, and some people fill that up with crack or with alcohol or with going on the internet all night long, whatever. We become addicted to certain sensations to replace these underlying discomfort. The problem is that we're attaching to things in the world that are undependable. If every single time we feel lonely, we immediately have to run and find people, that's going to suck. Because there's going to be times when you're lonely, maybe at 5 in the morning. Or maybe when you run out, you're going to find people that you don't like. Or maybe when you do find the people that you do like, they're not going to stay and do the things that you want them to do. So if you're always answering your loneliness by trying to find people to distract you, without instead going and addressing the inner feelings of the loneliness, you're attaching to something that's very short term. That's the nature of craving. It's so short term. We jump from one craving solution to the next. We jump to, okay, that person will make me feel better. That thing will make me feel better. That place, if I travel to there, I'll feel better. If I only can get this person to love me, I'll feel better. If I get a bigger apartment, I'll feel better. If I get a better job, I'll feel better, etc. And all these things only last for a little while. Eventually, the people in these that we're depending on, or the places or the things, either A, they change, they go away, or we, guess what? We get bored of them. Our tolerance goes up. Eventually, there's this great, you know, story that the level of happiness that a millionaire feels on getting his first million, to get that same level of happiness again that lasts very short, he's got to make 10 million the next time. Then he's got to make like 30 million. Then he's got to make 70 million. And eventually, to get that feeling of success that's eluding him, or that feeling of being worthwhile that's eluding him, that he's looking for outside of himself, he's got to basically own the entire world. And the Buddha said that even the entire world eventually won't fill up that feeling of loneliness, because it's in here. You can't take what's out there, which we'll get bored of, which will do the things we don't want, which will change and fill up that feeling in here. We've got to address what's going on inside of us. So the first type of craving, again, is sensual pleasures. Just looking for sensual pleasures that will distract us so we don't have to feel our internal loneliness, lack of purpose, feeling abandoned, feeling rejected, all those things that we feel, which are internal feelings, we're looking for external diversion so we don't have to feel them. That's sensual pleasure. Now, there's two other ways that we crave, and they're based on identity. The Buddha said that eventually we can get to a place in life where sometimes we know that no matter what we find or whatever sensual pleasures we find, it's just the way we're experiencing the world that's making it, that's not being fulfilling. So we look for an entirely new identity. We think, when I become older, I'll be able to be happy. When I become, have a PhD, I'll be happy. When I become a doctor, I'll be happy. When I become married, I'll be happy. When I take on this whole new identity, I'll be happy. I'll give you an analogy that's helpful to explain this. Suppose you have a large ocean, and there's three people standing in front of this ocean. There's a photographer, there's a surfer, and there's a marine biologist. Each of those three people, guess what? They're going to see that ocean in a different way. The photographer is going to see the ocean as a beautiful object to photograph. The surfer is going to see the ocean as something that gives him excitement and a thrill. He's looking at the waves. The marine biologist, though, looks at the ocean as something to explore and study. If it was an oil person, they might think of the ocean as just a place to set up an offshore oil drill. So we all look at the world differently depending on our identity or the identity that we assign ourselves. If we're a photographer, we don't think that we should pay attention to the ocean in terms of whether it's fun to surf or whether what kind of marine life is in it. That's for the surfer and the marine biologist. We're just looking at it aesthetically. So we get to these places in life where we decide, well, my identity is getting in the way. I've got to become a different person so so that I can appreciate and enjoy life more. If only I wasn't so serious, if only I was funnier and happier and smarter, then I'd really enjoy life. So we invest all this stuff in becoming someone different. While we do that, the third process that the Buddha said of craving is when we become something new, we get rid of something old. If we're wanting to become someone new, a new identity, then we're killing off our old identity. Sometimes we simply think, oh, I can't wait until I'm no longer young, I'm no longer physically small, I can't wait till I beef up, I can't wait till I'm no longer single, I can't wait till I'm no longer married, I can't wait till I'm no longer engaged, I can't wait till I'm no longer working, I can't wait till, you know, whatever. So sometimes it's just a desire to get rid of an identity, or sometimes it's just to acquire one. But all these three things, the trying to find sensations that will distract us, try to assume an identity that will make us experience the world perfectly, or trying to get rid of one, all these are three of the same thing. They're craving, and they don't work. They don't work. They don't work because they don't last. They're not dependable. Even if you find the perfect identity, you're still going to find frustrating things out there in the world. People are still going to do the things you don't want them to do. You're still going to have shitty days at job. You're still going to have your roommate leave the towel on the floor. You're still going to have your mother call you when you don't want you to if your mother's alive. You're still going to have shit happen. You're still going to get old. You're still going to get sick. You're still going to die. So all of these solutions to finding lasting happiness, they don't work. That's what the nature of craving is. It's a little bit like if we're in a subway station and we jump on the first train that comes into the station. That's the way we are with our thoughts. We look at the first train that comes in and we jump on it without even the slightest idea where these thoughts are taking us. Most of these thoughts are taking us to stress and suffering. A lot of the thoughts, for example, I wonder what people are thinking of me. I wonder how I compare to others. I wonder how much money I'll have in the future. I wonder when I can retire. I wonder, blah, blah, blah. All those kinds of thoughts, we think that they'll distract us and make us not feel this insecurity and that they'll somehow be useful. But in fact, they're not. They're just identity seeking and they don't work. The Buddha said, however, luckily, that there is a lasting source of happiness and peace. There is a path that does work. We don't have to actually all the time overbalance and trying to find the solution out there to our inner stress, our inner disappointments, our inner frustration. We actually have access to something that is lasting. The third noble truth is there is a relief, a release from suffering. There is a state called nibbana, and that state is a state where we don't have to stress out and suffer, where we can be truly peaceful at home in our own experience. And that's my cliffhanger, because I'm going to tell you what that is, the cause of it, next week. So thank you for listening. And now it's your turn to ask any questions. Thanks. What happened?